This episode of Yes But Why Podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
I get students that are still new to improv. I get students who is just like bursting with energy. They really wanna improve all the time. And it's a different advice for all of them. And I would just say like it's a journey, and where you are right now is probably where it's the time is right for where you are, you know. And some people want to like push forward, and I say like, you know, it's okay. You know, just you can calm down and not feel you're being left behind. And if someone's still new also, yeah, just take time and enjoy it. So there's no one general advice for all students, because they're all different.
Yeah, I noticed on your website that there were a few testimonials that spoke to the fact that you were very individualistic when you do your coaching and your teaching. Where did you get that idea? Like, what part of your experience led you to this idea that, like, I'm not just going to package one idea that I have. I'm instead going to listen and experience each student and give them what I feel like they need.
Yeah, I guess because I started out with one improv troupe, and we started out together, so everyone's basically on the same time in their journey. And then I moved to other towns and joined another improv troupe, or actually created an improv troupe, and they're at different points in their time. And I just realized, like, if you just treat them the same way, it won't benefit them at that time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, everybody needs something a little bit different. Did you where did you get your ideas for how to divide it up? Like, are you reading books about it? Are you taking workshops or both? Like, how did you develop your own teaching style? I mean, maybe you don't even think of it that way. I understand. I understand if you don't, but you know what I mean? Like, if you do think of it as a teaching style, how did you put it together?
I've never actually thought what I'm doing, but I guess it's it's part of my daytime job, because as being in academia, and I'm always dealing with from professors to fellow postdocs to teaching coaching. I wouldn't say coaching, supervising PhD students and supervising master students. They're at different points in their academic journey. So I already appreciate that. And I think that's just natural transference to the improv world. Oh. But I don't actually think about it and read books on improv coaching until recently.
Sure. Yeah, that's interesting that you mention it, the you frame it the way that you do. Working in academia, you're right. I mean, like, it's all about collaboration. Everybody has to work together, and everybody's at different levels. If you're going to be a good advisor, you have to just sort of say, okay, how can I help you where you're at? And that's great. I legitimately thought, so you teach or you work in neuroscience, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm working in neuroscience. Yeah.
Did you ever, like the connection in my, I like, I'm always fascinated with the idea of how the brain works with improv. Have you ever investigated that in the sort of overlap of your two arts, as it were?
Yeah, I understand. And that's really funny because a lot of people in the academic world ask me the same thing.
Yeah.
What do I bring from improv into science? And what does science bring into improv? There's probably a lot, but I don't realize it. And actually, I try to keep them separate. Like improv is like my fun time.
Yeah.
And to get away from science, to be as different as possible from the way I think in science. And if the way you think in science and the way you think in improv are just counterbalancing one another for my own sanity.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that because, like, yeah, you're right. I came into this conversation, like, clearly a bunch of people thinking, like, this guy's a scientist. How is his science brain putting together improv? But, you know, you're a human and you're just like, no, I need some science time and I need some improv time and I need them to be separate. And the idea of that, I think you're clearly a better person than I. I'm like, wow, I'd love to separate things in my life. I can't do that. You're like that's so cool. What a great way to use it. Like improv is fun. Improv is helping you, you know, forget about the pressures and stuff like that. Oh man, I really like that. It's funny how
improvise, I try to be as far away from my usual life. And I love my life in academia. It's not as a picture, it's like a drab world of science without emotions and gray and such. No, I love it in science, but you do need to separate yourself out of it. So when I was living in the Netherlands, I would study, do my research, and then when I go home on the bicycle, I would just be doing rhyming and doing hoedowns while I'm bicycling. It's like I'm trying to separate this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd probably deeply need a break. It is super intense, both academia and science, and I'm sure the work that you're doing. Yeah, you definitely need to cool down from it. So tell me about you going to school in the Netherlands. So you were studying, and is that when you got your first taste of improv, or were you always a performer? You're talking about being on a bike, singing and rapping. What's the story with that?
Oh, I discovered it when I was in the Netherlands. I already know about Whose Line Is It Anyway, from TV and stuff, but I've never seen it live. And then when I was a master's student, or a PhD student back then, I discovered the world of improv. And what was the question again?
Pretty much how did you discover improv? So keep going with what you're doing. You're a PhD student, and how did you find it? Where was it?
I was in a small town in the Netherlands called Groningen, there were different kind of entertainment, but I never found something that is quite what is exactly for me, like music festivals and dancing, etc. That's never my taste. And then there was like a little troupe who's doing little improv games. And I become like a fanboy. It's like coming every Wednesday evening, watching them. And then one day they say, hey, want to try it out. And I was like, is it possible? Is this an art for mortals and not just people with artistic talent? And I felt that way. It's like, Is this for real? Can anyone do this?
No, I totally understand because I see it from the other side for sure. I have only ever done theater, like forever, my whole life. And so sometimes, especially now that I'm older, when other things come up, I feel like less qualified to you know, be interested in them or have an opinion about something. Like, it's like, well, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know. Maybe they're clearly things are fine. You know, like, it can be so weird. You feel like you are in your one group and can't break in. How did you get the courage to break into this world of improv?
I don't know what got into me. They said, "Do you want to try a workshop?" I guess I was enjoying their shows a lot, and I figured, why not, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Prepare yourself. Read some books first before I hit my first workshop, obviously.
You did?
I read Truth and... Yeah, so I dig up Truth and Comedy. It's like, okay, this guy's inviting me to do improv workshop. I better know what I'm doing.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I read up the Truth and Comedy and Harold, and then comes in, and I'm so ready for Zip, Zap, and Zop.
What a great way to prepare. I love it.
I guess if you ask, like, how does academia bleed into my world of improv, is how I approach improv, like how I would study for it, do literature studies, do video literature on YouTube.
Yeah.
Intensely before hitting any workshop.
Huh. Do you still do that now? Like, before you take a workshop, do you like really research the person that's going to teach you that workshop so that you know, a little bit about what they might be talking about?
Oh, yeah. I researched you already. Before I went into this interview, I've listened to at least 3 of your podcasts to understand what the beat is like. Are they gonna ask more about improv or more about life? Prepare myself to have personal questions, maybe. So I did a lot of research before jumping into anything.
That's so great. How well prepared you must feel, or do you feel prepared at all, even though you do it?
I can understand. So when you say, okay, this workshop is going to be like this, I would need 2 photos of you doing your headshot, etc. And I already know, okay, yeah, I've seen other profiles on your podcast, so I understand where you're going for.
Good. I feel good about that. I feel better about being consistent. It's certainly ebbed and flowed over the time, for sure. I wonder, did you listen to more recent episodes or ones from long ago?
Yeah, so the last one I listened was from Matias Avaca.
Oh, yeah.
about multilingual improv, which was something that's actually I'm picking up very recently. It's very interesting.
Oh, yeah? Because the improv theater that you run is all in English, right?
It's all in English except for this one show, which has become like one of my little passion projects. So we are doing a show in fake Dutch. Because I live in the Netherlands, I do speak Dutch. I recruited a couple Dutch people for the team, and then I recruited 3 other people who doesn't speak Dutch. And then we don't tell the audience anything beforehand. We just go into the show playing a show, an entire set in Dutch. And some people actually speak real Dutch. Some people speak gibberish. In the end, the audience, some of the audience are not quite sure which one's fake, which one's real. And the fact is there's like different languages going on is actually a rich experience. So that's why I like that podcast episode you had.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I feel like that's definitely something that people are interested in, you know, the melding of various languages put together so that, you know, the audience can experience not only, like, if the person in the audience speaks both languages, they can be in on a level of the joke that people who in the audience don't speak Dutch don't get, but yet mm-hmm. they still get an experience. And I wonder at the end, it would be so interesting to find out individually from the audience members if they have the same idea of what happened or different ideas. You know?
Oh, it's so funny because I've had different ideas. So some people were enjoying it. It's like, what the hell are you doing, man? Why are you? It's like a candid camera for the audience kind of thing. But they right. they were, but for them it was entertained. And then there's also some other audience who actually asked for a refund because they say, I thought you promised an English show and this was in Dutch. And we were just laughing because, like, we didn't make the refunds and apologies, etc. But he's like, they actually bought into our Dutch show, our fake Dutch show.
Wow.
That is
That's so interesting. What a reaction. Yeah, I mean, I get it. I've definitely had that before. I have given refunds to people who just didn't understand what the show was. We're like, I don't know what you thought this show was going to be. You know, but like, oh, wow. Huh. Yeah. But even just like what happens in the scene, if somebody was like, yeah, that guy was mad, you know, and it was because of the wife. And then they're like, what? I thought it was a robbery, you know, like, or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, there's also another show. So I've heard about it doing multiple languages from Matthias, and then also from some of the people, the Pirates of Tokyo Bay in Japan, doing the multilingual stuff. But there's also this show.
English and Japanese.
Yeah. Yeah. English and Japanese happening all at once, which is fascinating. But I think, though, that being said, for their audience, probably not asking for refunds because, like, half of their show is in English and half of their show is in Japanese. So everyone's aware of what's going on. Thankfully, that part's out. I do love the idea of springing it on the audience. I think it's super fun. I think that idea that you've done is, like, an added part because, like, one thing that I always, whenever I'm teaching improv, I'm always talking to people, my students, about the idea that, like, improv is super fun to be part of, but watching improv can be tough because you feel on the outside of what the experience is. You're watching someone else have a good time. And if you're not the kind of person who can experience that, then some people are like, nah, I'm not into it. And that just means that's the way they are, right? They just can't watch another person having a good time and be like, that's great. You know, I get it, whatever. But the idea, yeah. I mean, like, you know, I'm compassionate to whomever, even if you have no feelings. So, but the idea is, like, if you are connecting with the audience and giving them a ride to go on as well, so that it's not just you're watching me do something, but it's like, now you have a job to do. Figure out what's going on here. And even the people that speak both languages, I'm sure, were confused because if part of the performers don't, like, speak Dutch, they don't know what the people are saying to them. So they're reacting in whatever random way, you know? It's so absurd and I love it. And it sounds great. I'm glad it's your pet project.
Yeah, we're not going to do that extensively. It's like it's an experience kind of thing. Yeah, do it once. The audience, one of the audience said, like, that was so fantastic, but I don't want to see that, like, every week. But that was really fantastic to experience.
Yeah, it's like once a year. There's like an immersive experience in your theater, you know. And when you walk in, nobody's speaking any language, you know. And it's like, can you live in a world where you don't speak? You need to order drinks and get to your seat and pay for your tickets. Can you do it? Oh, man. Wild. Oh, you know what made me think of? There's this show in New Orleans, Louisiana, that has, it's like half play and half improv. So like they do a person will write a play, like a, you know, a two person scene, and then they give half of, they give the lines of one character to an actor who is going to memorize those lines. And then the other person is an improviser and they like try to do the scene. The actor is supposed to just say the lines that they were given. They're not supposed to improvise or add anything at all. They can just say the words they were given, but the improviser can say whatever they want. So oftentimes it changes the context of the scene.
Is this like a game or like a show?
It's a show.
I know of like short form games that does that, but to do that an entire show, that's amazing.
Well, it's a full show because it's not only a showcase of the improvisers, it's a showcase of the playwrights. So it's like, it was like local playwrights got to be the writers of the scenes. And then they'd be like, look at these people, this person wrote it. And then, and they'd play both sides, but separately. So it'd be like John and Susie have a scene. The John part does a scene with one improviser and the Susie part does a scene with another improviser. And then they play the scene together and you're like, oh man, that's what the scene was about? Like, crazy.
The improvisers try to like make it seem very seamless, or do they actually show that they're surprises, that they were surprised with something?
No, or no, they tried to play right into it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's up for the audience to like figure out which ones, how far the script went into and which parts is improvised.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because they got all the actors were improvisers. So no one, it wasn't like, oh, that guy, it only does Shakespeare, so clearly he's the actor. And that, I know that girl, she's the improviser. No, it was like all improvisers. So you never knew who was doing the written lines and who was doing the improvised lines. It actually ended up beautiful. Every time I saw the show, it was beautiful every time. And I was like, I cannot believe this. This is so amazing. So I just love that idea. I mean, it's really just an openness, right? It's just an openness to whatever happens and trying to like feel from the other person what vibe they're giving you. For you, when you perform, what's the way you enter a scene? Do you enter like feeling out your other players, or do you enter doing with like an intention, like I'm going to do this?
Well, it depends on what kind of show I'm doing.
Yeah.
I guess with I used to do short form, which I have to enter scenes more forcefully.
Sure.
And then I do montages, which is game based. So I would enter scenes already with a premise, maybe. Mm-hmm. There are also some shows that are more like character based, and I'm just going to feel my way. I guess in general, I often come into this scene already like attacking it right away instead of feeling it too much.
Yeah,
which is not always, I mean, it's not always the best thing, you know. I realize that I have to hold back sometimes, just like give other people space for them to feel it out and make the scenes that they want to make instead of just playing to my ideas.
Sure, but that's like what we were talking about earlier, and like just being cognizant of the people around you and letting them be who they are and not trying to force them in any one direction. I'm sure your teaching helps you to be a great collaborator when it comes to an improv scene.
Probably, maybe. I would like to think so.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know how I look like from the outside.
Yeah, totally. I was like, I just realized I sort of gave you a compliment for you to agree with. But hey, let's jump back, because I feel like we jumped from, so the people that you were watching improv with in the small town while you were getting your PhD, they told you to do a workshop, and then you read Truth in Comedy. What happened when you took the workshop?
they said like, okay, for this exercise, we are going to do this and this, like set up the rules. And I was like, oh, you're doing this exercise. I know of this. Try to remain cool. But I was an overexcited puppy.
All right. But you didn't like tell them what happened in the exercise, did you?
No. So, I mean, I also like, I have the greatest respect of them as the teachers, right? So I know like, I'm just a newbie coming in here. I'm not going to say anything, but I know what you're going for. I know what you're trying to do, but I'm not going to take the spotlight. I'm not going to go like a student that comes like, oh, you're doing this exercise well. It should be this phrase that you're using.
I love that. I usually open up most of mine with, you might know this by a different name, and there might be different noises that I'm going to make you make, but just stay with me.
Yeah, you get some heated discussion, like, is this big booty or big buddy? And it's the same exercise.
You're like, we've been talking about this for 10 minutes, guys. Like, this is not something we need to waste our time on. And they're like, it's important. I've had those for sure. I've had people like cannot do it the way I'm trying to do it. I'm like, I promise, I've taught this a bunch of times and I like it this way because it helps me do something. And I promise I'll tell you what it is when we finish doing the exercise.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, it's my process, y'all. Just give me my process.
So when I was in that small town, they had one way of doing zip, step, and jump. And I thought that's the way you do it. And then I move on to a different town and they do it differently. And so there was a period that's like, no, that's not how you do it. But then over time, I know that you learn doing it both ways and become better that you can do it both ways. So that's also part of why I feel like you have to sympathize, you have to be able to accommodate to different kind of styles. You can't just be fixated on how you learn the way you learn it.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many schools of thought, just millions of them that will be, and if you try to compare them, sometimes they get super mad, you know. And the other thing too is there's a lot of misconceptions, right? So like here, there's a lot of phrases like, well, you've probably used them, Chicago style. And I'm like, guys, I don't know what that means anymore. Like Chicago style isn't even a phrase that really, like, I'm like, what is that? And then they'll say, as if to use another jargon word to explain it, they'll go, you know, like UCB. Guys, you're saying things and you're just making assumptions about entire schools that are like Chicago's a whole city. You know how many schools are there? There's no way you can just say one style is in that place. Like, and people use these phrases and they try to like explain it. And just the other day, I was talking to somebody that was from UCB and I was like, do you know that people say this is the UCB style? And he's like, what? That's not what we do. And it was like, of course. You know, we're all making assumptions and deciding what we want to do. But the funniest thing is flexibility is like the number one improv tool. Like if you can't be flexible,
yes,
then what are you doing? Right? Like,
right, right.
Man, it is funny how people get caught up in their stuff, though. I think improv is necessary for life. You know, and to your friends who ask you, you know, why you would do it or how it helps you in science, I think purely the idea of flexibility. You know, like, maybe it isn't. Just the openness to that idea of for anything is like, could make you wildly more intelligent purely because you're curious about like, well, I know this rule, but like, maybe it isn't. So let's check it out. Isn't that exactly what scientists do? Check it out.
That's true.
Like,
that's true. I guess like the difference is like in improv is like, oh, this is a different way, and you're really like jumping into onto that boat. Like, okay, so that's how you do it. In science, you're like, okay, that's a bit weird, and I don't really believe that, but let's entertain that idea a little bit. So there's a little bit of like an openness to believe what you know is wrong and like explore that other idea. And obviously then comes all the facts and the data to verify which one is correct and which one is incorrect.
Yeah. But you have to be curious for both science and art. You need to be curious. You'd be open to what is. I mean, most of the great, you know, finds in both art and science weren't something that they were looking for one thing and probably found something else. Like, hey guys, you notice this thing's happening? Like, what? We weren't planning that at all. It's how life is. It's how improv is. So after you took these classes at the workshop, what did you do next? You said you moved to another city. You did something else. Where did you move? Where did you do improv? Where's the next journey in your improv discovery?
So I went from the Netherlands and then I went to Norway and then I had a bit of a break because I didn't find any improv there. But then I found myself in Oslo with some improvisers, and they play a different style than I used to. They have a very strong Keith Johnstone background.
Yeah.
And so that's not something that I'm completely familiar with in the beginning. I guess in the beginning I was like struggling, how do I fit what I know into this thing? Mm-hmm. And I'm still doing that maybe. No, I think I've now understood and have the appreciation for like Johnstone style improv compared to what I was doing before. And I think I'm better for it.
Yeah, combining the ideas. Now, the first small theater you said was sort of short form. Was there any school of thought? You had read Truth in Comedy, but were they also Del Close sort of style in their stuff as well, in the small town where you did the workshop?
Well, they were doing short form, but somehow not quite the same Johnstone style. And I felt like it's a lot of improv that is like you take care of yourself, take care of your scene, you know. And when I come to Norway, the way it is, there's often like a director of the scene that sort of like tries to fix the scenes a little bit, try to push the scenes in different ways. Hmm. So in the Netherlands, I felt like, you know, I'm out there on a limb. The scene can crash or succeed. It's all for the players on the stage. And then in Norway, sometimes there's like help from a director, et cetera. So it's like a bit of a safety net. I find it also affecting how people improvise as well.
Huh. Which type do you like better? Do you like the freedom or do you like having the support?
I like the freedom or responsibility, if you can call it that.
Well, yeah, if you're creating the whole scene and it's make or break based on what you do, I'd call that responsibility, yeah.
But again, like I said, I develop an appreciation for how it is done the other way as well, right?
Yeah.
So in the beginning, I would just say like, oh, this freedom and responsibility is the number one. But now I'm thinking like, you know, I can understand why they would do it this way. They're trying to make a more complete piece of art, for instance.
Well, it's different types of storytelling too, you know. I mean, it's almost like, you know, with your show that is half in Dutch and half in English speakers speaking gibberish. Like, there is an art to that. There is a style to that. There is something very specific to that. And in the same way, so is, you know, the short form show that has the freedom of creating whatever you want, or, you know, it's all just different ways of putting something in front of an audience. There are so many different, I mean, it's like writing a song, you know, there's only so many notes. Yeah. But everyone does it a little different, and everyone accepts that, like, yeah, this one's different. This one's this one. And that song, which is also using the same tools, exactly the same tools, is different, you know, in the same, you know, so it's just, and some people are like, I like this music or that music. And, you know, improv is improv, music is music, but, you know, there's just a little thing in it. I think a lot of us like what we started with a lot. Because of what you were talking about mm-hmm. earlier, how it's hard to adjust.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right about, like, having the kind of different music. Like, there's also, like, chords that work. And some people like this kind of chords that work. And some people like a different kind of chord.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, and they act all high and mighty about it. Like, they'll be like, oh, this is the right way to do it. And you're like, really? I don't know. It's literally just music that you didn't invent. But, you know, you're just playing a guitar. Like, stop being so, you know, I don't know. I feel like I get that a lot, even in improv. Like, there's some people, and I just want to be open to everything. I like the idea of it. And, you know, I've never done an improv show where there was a director that was pointing me in a certain direction. So I bet you I would have trouble with that. I mean, I'm a control freak. I bet you I definitely have trouble with that, you know, but I'm hearing about it. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like thinking of the theater in my town that's got the Johnstone. And I'm like, yeah, I want to do it. Okay. I want to feel weird. I want to be like, how does this work? What am I doing? Because, I mean, that's the part of improv that the performers have the joy, the fun, the figuring it out. I get to be like, I don't know what's going to happen, and figure it out. And, you know, that for me is the number one thing. Like we were talking about earlier, trying to bring that joy to the audience. But, you know, for me, it's like literally just going out there to juggle, even if I don't keep any of the balls in the air, just the idea that I did it is all I needed.
So, yeah, even that is not like everyone, wants the same thing. Like,
totally.
You and I like this feeling of like juggling, but mm-hmm. a lot of improvisers I know also like appreciate like this kind of guidance at times, you know.
Yeah, and structure.
And what's that?
Yeah, and structure like makes you feel safe.
Yeah, and structure and. They would still improvise to a certain extent and then get help. And that is also what they enjoy. And it took me some time to also appreciate that, I guess.
Yeah. No, you make an excellent point. Like the idea that, yeah, it turns out in this conversation, you and I have a similar feeling about it, but you're right. Millions of people don't. Like there's tons of people who are like, oh, no, no, I need to do, like, even the idea you mentioned Whose Line earlier. Whose Line in its format, in the short form sort of like game competition format situation, like, that has a structure that some people really prefer. Like, some people will come to, I've seen people come to montage shows, and they're like, wait, what's this? I wanted there to be, you know, this whole game aspect and someone talking to me. And it's like, no, you're watching like an improvised play. It's a different situation. And you know, so everybody enjoys or likes structure or doesn't like structure, but yeah, it's, you're right to say that we need to acknowledge everybody's different. And I guess that's why, and why it's awesome that there's so many different kinds of improv.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So in Europe, it's only recently that we get a lot of the Chicago improv influence.
Which I'm and debunking it's been interesting as a thing. To, I don't even know what like, that phrase means.
whatever that is, Chicago improv.
Yeah.
For Europeans, it's still a one single entity. That's the way Chicago people do it.
Totally.
They don't realize it's like 100 million ways of improvising in Chicago as well.
No, in Europe, it's fine to call it Chicago. Please refer to the whole country as Chicago. That's fine. But you know, I'm just saying, like, when you're in one of the United States, come on. You know that that's not, come on. Anyway, so in Europe, they recently gotten the Chicago improv.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see, like, some improvisers transitioning from one style to the other. I think it's quite interesting times in the European improv.
Oh, yeah? Why do you say that?
Yeah, because you still have, like, these very strong, can I even say a traditional way of doing improv? But not traditional, but, like, the first wave of improv that people were doing. And then now you get, like, the second wave of improv, the Chicago improv. And then it starts to mix a little bit, and people are still figuring out which one they like better. It's funny.
You said when you moved to Oslo that you met some improvisers and they were doing the Johnstone method. Was there a school, or was it like a handful of people that were just doing shows in bars and stuff?
No, there's a professional theater in Oslo. So they had strong Johnstonian influences because I think one of their founders, one of their most veteran teachers, come from Loose Moose Theater, where Johnstone was, so they come in with their style of improv, and it has grown since in Oslo, producing a lot of improvisers doing that particular style. So it's not just like one little troupe. It's like it's already a community of improvisers doing this kind of improv. So I come into their workshop. There's already, like, I think there was 40 people doing that workshop with that style. And I could either say, like, oh, this is not for me, or I could adapt, right? And if I say it's not up for me, then I don't do any kind of improv. So I have to adapt.
Yeah, that's a good reason to adapt for sure. How did you decide after you had become part of this new community, how did you decide to start your own thing?
I think it's at first it's just a language thing, because I could understand Norwegian, but I couldn't improvise to the level I want to improvise in Norwegian. So I gathered some people, like, hey, you want to try an English improv? And yeah, we started doing that. And then I realized, like, wait a minute, there's also, like, there's different styles that we want to explore from what was mainstream in Oslo. And so it grew from there. But I just want to improvise in English. That was the beginning. And then it grew into something else.
At this point in your life, you're speaking Norwegian regularly, though, right?
No, I work in the university, so most all conversations are in English.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Because I'm also working in an international group with people from different countries. So the working language is English.
Oh, okay. So, like, everybody's from all over. Okay. I'm thinking you just have a bunch of Norwegian students and you're like, listen, guys, we're speaking in English. And I was like, wow, okay. But, oh, that makes more sense that there's everybody from everywhere. And that just happens to be the common language. Wild. Huh.
It began most of them to be Norwegian. and then it grew, has its own gravity for all the expatriates, like foreigners living in Norway, who wants to do this as well, and so we attract different people from different countries. I think in we estimated like there's maybe 60 countries in our communities represented, something like that.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. And how long have you been doing it?
From which start?
I don't know what you mean.
Because I feel like I have my life in improv comes in two stages. So like the birth and I was reborn.
Oh,
so,
I meant your specific school in Oslo right now.
Oh, that's 4 years ago, I think. Yeah. I think 4 years, 4 or 5. Yeah, four years, maybe.
Wow. So the school's been going for only 4 years, yet you have 60 countries represented in the community. That's pretty wild.
It's pretty wild. We have workshops where 40 people, 50 people are coming in, doing level one workshop, doing intro to improv workshop. We had once had 70 people in their basement just doing improv games. You know, that's wild. That's so fun to see.
Yeah, that's what a great thing. And what a great way to bring people together. Like, people from all over that just happen to move to Oslo and they're like, oh man, how am I going to make any friends? I don't speak Norwegian. And they're like, hey, turns out I can go to this spot and other people will speak English with me. That's a really great, really great way to bring people together for sure. Like giving them a safe space. Now, are you guys in your school? Are you, trying all sorts of different kinds of, you mentioned different styles. Are you, you know, teaching some of the John Stone stuff, but also, you know, dipping your toes in the Chicago style and, you know, some of the Del Close stuff that you studied before, even studied on your own?
Yeah. So we have many teachers now. And it's encouraged that they each pursue what they want to do, right? So then also the students get into, like, they get a little bit of what this teacher likes and what that teacher likes and what I like. Because there are stuff that I am completely incapable of doing, which is usually grounded improv. Because I just like break every improv scene after I've been doing grounded improv for 2 minutes. I just like, okay, it gets a bit unpleasant for me. But so it's encouraged that people find their own style.
So what are the things that you've been working on recently? What are the different kinds of formats that you're exploring right now?
I am exploring right now something that is more grounded, because I feel that's something I need to brush up on. So I've been taking more slow improv kind of style, trying to brush up on that.
Huh.
So dummy style, Jason Schatz, Colleen Doyle. Kind of real life, a little bit crazy, real life, a little bit crazy, instead of just going all the way crazy.
Oh, okay.
So that's what I've been doing.
So when you say grounded, do you mean dramatic, or do you just mean having taking some of the wild and absurd elements and giving them like a real life world to live in?
I mean grounded as in like these are actual people kind of thing, instead of being complete caricatures.
Oh yeah.
So if if a person has a certain quirk, we won't shake it up to 100, but still keep it sort of that. Yeah, it's still realistic in some way.
Yeah. Huh. And are you still shooting for comedy, or is it like an improvised play situation with these real people?
Shooting for comedy? What is it?
I mean, are the scenes supposed to be funny, or are you trying to create like a play that has like not in the way that not like a narrative necessarily? Well, I guess a narrative. Just like mm-hmm. when you say you're dealing with real people, in my mind, when you're doing comedy, whether you're writing sketch or you're performing improv, comedy characters are always a little crazy. Like they're never making the right decision. They're not going to learn a lesson. You know, like they're I teach comedy camp to kids, and the number one thing I say is they're not going to be better at the end of the scene. If they trip up top, they're going to keep tripping. They're going to hurt themselves over and over and over, and they're never going to figure out how to not do that. Because for me, that's what I imagine comedy to be. But perhaps I'm limiting the idea that you're developing with your format. When you're trying to shoot for real characters, is it just sort of like you're finding comedy in the circumstance and not in the character play? Or are they more dramatic scenes?
Now, it's still in the veins of comedy. I wouldn't go into dramatic improv just yet. But I want to vary the level of absurdity a little bit, so mm-hmm. that not every scene is absurd. Sometimes you pull back a little bit and have something that is more relatable.
Yeah.
Sort of like situations you might already see in life, but you would take some choices that was maybe a little bit scary, a little bit more insecure. Sure. Those kind of choices in life that you've always thought of, what if I actually spoke up to the boss?
Right. Little things.
Those kind of things.
Yeah.
What if I say something truthfully to that other person?
Yeah. Are you doing this in like workshop form?
I'm doing that. Doing this with my troupe, practicing with them.
That's great.
Yeah.
What's the name of the troupe that you're working on with this style?
Well, my troupe is called the Speakeasy, the Improv Speakeasy.
Nice. That's awesome.
Like the secret establishment back in the 1920s, speakeasy kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, I know about speakeasies. We got a couple bars called Speakeasy in Austin for sure. they like yeah. playing with it. They're like, ha, it's illegal. And you're like, yeah, great. But I totally understand. I love the idea of it, especially when it comes to improv, for sure. And I also like the idea that, like, the improv speakeasy is trying something new, like going outside the lines, because it's kind of what the speakeasy did, right? That's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So, last question, and then we'll wrap up the interview. Thank you so much for talking to me, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
What is the thing that you are most excited about right now in your life? Like, what's the thing that, and it can be your improv life or your academia life. What's the exciting thing that you're working on right now that you're putting all your effort into and really excited to see how it works out?
Wow. I think all of them are improv related, like little improv awesome. Projects, big improv projects. So I'm really excited about a festival that we're organizing. And since I'm running the running an improv community here, I'm just like very excited for this festival and how it will inspire our community. Because we have this festival like every year, and then post-festival, it's always like people are in a trance. They improvise differently. They improvise with so much more new inspiration. So that's what I'm really excited about.
What's the name of the running festival?
It's called the Oslo Improv Festival. Without the V, Oslo Improv Festival. So all the Chicago improvisers, they come in and say, you should have put a V there. But they say, no. We say, in Oslo, we said improv without the V.
A lot of Europe says improv.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that they would come in and like, you know, improviser explain you. I'm sorry. That's not the right spelling. Oh, my God. I apologize for all of my people.
No, that's what we do as well. We come to Chicago. They say, that's not how you spell it.
So are you organizing this festival? Like, or did you find all of the talent to come in and do the workshops and the shows?
It's a team effort. Awesome. So we have a core team of six people that are running the show. We're just like helping each other out, trying to make this work. So I can't say it's just me. No. I'm not even the director. The director is my good friend, Kevin. He's doing a whole lot of shit.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to help him out.
You're just trying to help. That's so great. So great that you're putting a lot of effort into that. It should be really wonderful. What are the dates of the festival?
It's going to be October 29th until November 3rd. So it's going to be almost a week from Tuesday till Sunday.
Wow. That's long. Awesome.
That's really awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it all booked up? Like there's a website where I can go and link it to let everybody know who's performing and who's teaching workshops and everything?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You could check our website and the Oslo Improv Festival.com. OSLO Oslo. And then the Impro without the V. Impro Festival.
Oslo Improv Festival. .com. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. That's wonderful. I'm real excited for that. That should be really great. And thank you so much for speaking to me, chatting, taking time out of your busy, busy day to share stories with me and just kind of go deep talking about improv and theory and stuff. This is nice. This has been nice.
Oh, I'm really grateful. I love talking about improv all the time. Thanks so much, Amy.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you, and have a good rest of your day.
All right. You too.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thank you.